Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show and the Fastest 15, the fastest 15 minutes in all of media. I'm Jack Stein, sitting in for Dory Monson this afternoon. This came out yesterday from the AP as mask mandates end, Oregon bucks trend with new permanent rule. Now, you might be saying to yourself, why is it that the fine people who live in the state of Oregon, specifically Portland, Oregon, would want to be under the rule of masks? Why would they want to continue to wear masks? I don't know. I don't know why any sane human being out there would say, hey, you know what I really like is this filthy, disgusting piece of cloth that I put on my face day after day after day. The article goes like this. As states around the country lift COVID-19 restrictions, Oregon is poised to go the opposite direction, and many residents are fuming about it. A top health official is considering indefinitely extending rules requiring masks and social distancing in all businesses in the state. The proposal would keep the rules in place until they are, quote, no longer necessary to address the effects of the pandemic in the workplace. Michael Wood is the administrator of the state's Department of Occupational Safety and Health, said the move is necessary to address a technicality in state law that requires a, quote unquote, permanent rule to keep current restrictions from expiring. Now, if you ask me, this has nothing to do with coronavirus restrictions. This has nothing to do with coronavirus safety. This has everything to do with, hey, you know what we really like? We really like the power. We really like being able to tell people where they can and can't go. We really like being able to tell people that they have to wear masks over their face. We really like the control. Or let's not attribute malice. Maybe let's say this. Maybe these are people who have been so charged up by the media. Maybe these are people who have maybe drunk the Kool-Aid a little bit too much. And now they totally, wholeheartedly believe that if you are any age whatsoever, you can die from COVID-19. Even though the data just doesn't really pan out that way. They believe that everybody is equally susceptible to contracting and dying from COVID-19. But if we look at the data that came out from the CDC just last week, 80% of all people who pass away from COVID-19 over the age of 65, 17% of people over the age of 45, and then 2.8% everybody else. It actually breaks down like this. You know how many COVID-19 deaths there have been in the United States for people under the age of 18? It's about 260. Astronomically low. Still tragic, still very sad, but when you are making prescriptions, policy prescriptions for everybody else based on this kind of uniform approach, it simply will not work. And when you try to say, well, hey, we're just looking out for everybody, understand that people like me get really suspicious. I don't need you to pretend to have my best interests at heart. I don't need you to assert that level of authoritarianism into my life. Let me make that decision for myself. I think if you're the kind of person out there who's still really concerned about masks and you're still really worried about contracting COVID-19, Senator Ted Cruz had the best take on this last month when somebody said, hey, do you mind wearing a mask? We all remember this clip. Senator Ted Cruz, he goes up to give a talk in front of the quote-unquote television cameras, as he will say, and a reporter says, would you wear a mask? And Ted Cruz handles it probably the best that anybody could handle a situation like that. Here's what that sounded like last month.
Good afternoon. Yeah, when I'm talking to the TV camera, I'm not going to wear a mask, and all of us have been immunized, so you're welcome to step away if you like.
I love that clip so much because you hear the reporter. If you couldn't hear what he said, he said, would you mind wearing a mask? And then Ted Cruz says, not while I'm speaking to the television camera. And then he says, well, it would make us all feel better. And then Ted Cruz says, well, you're welcome to step away if you like. I feel like we should get back to that kind of old school, I'm going to take care of me mentality. If I'm uncomfortable with it, I can step away. If I don't want to be near someone who's not wearing a mask, I don't have to be near that person. This is getting very much so like a kind of like a first grade kindergarten mentality where we have to go run and tell teacher anytime anybody inconveniences us. And I wonder where the adults are in this situation and why we can't all just be adults about it and say, hey, you know what? I'm really paranoid about contracting COVID-19, so I will be double masking and I will be staying 6 feet away from everybody else. But if you choose not to do that, that is on You, if you choose to be the kind of person who says, you know what, I just prefer to not wear a mask and I've already been vaccinated or I think I've already had it. I wish we could get back to that, but apparently we all need to have, or at least the people in Oregon, feel as if they need to have mommy state come in and tell them what to do. And speaking of mommy state, Maxine Waters, as we mentioned in the last segment, urged Minnesota protesters to stay on the street if Derek Chauvin was acquitted in the George Floyd case. This is one of the things that concerns me very much so about the Derek Chauvin case and the George Floyd case. Is that if people do not get what they want, there might be, and there will probably be, riots in the streets, and they will be dramatic. So when I hear about all of these politicians, or when I hear about all these all of my contemporaries in the media just going off about the Derek Chauvin case or the George Floyd case, I'm thinking that they are laying the groundwork for just a tremendous explosion of rage and discontent. You have a bunch of young people out there who have been disaffected from society. They feel as if they are alienated from society. Maybe they don't have the best community relationship. Maybe they don't have the best parental relationship. And so now they feel the need to go out into the streets to, quote unquote, demonstrate. And what that ultimately means is we're going to flip over cars and we're going to throw things at cops. I mean, if you think about the language of a politician, it is a politician's responsibility to say responsible things. It is a politician's responsibility to say things that lower the temperature and slow the pace down. Here's Maxine Waters over the weekend talking about how people have to stay out in the streets and people got to keep doing what they're doing. Here's what that sounded like.
Yes, I would like to see the bill in Congress pass on police reform, but I know that the right wing, the racists, are opposed to it, and I don't know what's going to happen to it. But I know this, we've got to stay in the street, and we've got to demand justice.
So that's mob justice, staying in the street and demanding justice. That's mob justice. And thankfully, we live in a system that we don't have mob justice. We have the judicial system. And if you don't like the way the judicial system works, well, I mean, it's tough, right? Because your rights are my rights and my rights are your rights. You want to talk about going back to first grade? Because my rights are your rights and your rights are my rights, so we give Derek Chauvin a fair trial. And the burden of proof is what? The burden of proof is on the state. It's not on Derek Chauvin. The state has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he committed that murder. And if they did a bad job, you're going to go out and you're going to riot in the street and you're going to throw things at the police? What's interesting about this case, by the way, is out of all the lawyers on the prosecution, only one of them is a state prosecutor. The rest of them are private attorneys that were hired by the state. Keith Ellison hired private attorneys to come in to adjudicate this. So what does that say about their case? Additionally, if you think about it, that they don't have the kind of staff already to go out there and say, okay, well, we have a rock solid, airtight case as it pertains to Derek Chauvin and George Floyd. And moreover, when I look at all of the evidence that has been coming out on this case, if you look at the coverage from CNN or MSNBC, they continue to talk as if this is in a lock, that it's done. But every legal expert that I've spoken to about it says, maybe not so much. I've got a very good friend of mine. His name is Larry. He's a lawyer, and albeit he doesn't necessarily work in criminal law, but he's been following the case very closely. And he was saying, yeah, I don't see it. I honestly do not see it. It may happen, but the defense has provided enough of a reasonable doubt that it's possible that the Chauvin case ends up in a hung jury, that it's possible that he ends up even with an acquittal at this point in time. So we'll just have to see what happens. And if anything, I would have to encourage people just to pay attention to it to know when to not go into the streets. And that's really quite very sad. If we think about what's going on in the country, it's really quite very sad to say, hey, you know what? Maybe we'll have to avoid our major metropolitan areas for a couple of weeks, because there will be riots and there will be looting and there will just be absolute madness going on in the streets. And speaking of absolute madness, Peloton has issued a warning for its treadmill. They're talking about recalling the treadmill, saying that it poses serious risks to children for abrasions, fractures, and death. They're even talking about just recalling every single Peloton treadmill out there. Here's a little bit of the coverage from NBC News.
We hope that we will reach a voluntary recall and a stop sale. The Consumer Product Safety Commission releasing this disturbing video showing two children, unsupervised, playing on a Peloton Tread Plus. You see the little boy pulled under the 450-pound machine. Eventually, the child escapes uninjured.
We've had 39 incidents of objects, a pet, and worst of all, children being sucked underneath this device. And we believe that the public health and safety warrants putting this warning out.
Here's something that I do not understand about this whole incident. Is they're talking about, well, we've had 39 incidences of objects and pets and children being pulled under the Peloton. Where are the parents? In the footage that I just watched, I just saw a little boy and a little girl playing around a treadmill with no supervision whatsoever. In fact, these parents are so irresponsible that they have their playroom set up around this Peloton treadmill. And if you ask me, it doesn't matter if I have a Peloton treadmill in my house. It doesn't matter if I have a other kind of treadmill in my house. It doesn't matter if I have a stationary bike in my house. The idea that I would let my children around it unsupervised is beyond me. And these are very, very young children, by the way. So I'm thinking, when we're looking at a company like this and they say, well, we have to do a massive recall because people aren't safe enough or responsible enough to use our product, who's that on? Is that on Peloton for the design of their treadmill? Or is that on the parents and the people who are irresponsible around what is otherwise a very safe machine? I would put it on the people. But of course, they're doing this because they don't want to be sued and they don't want people to come after them. And there is nothing wrong with that. And speaking of people not wanting other people to come after them, a really sad story coming out of West Seattle. A teen was injured in a drive-by shooting, according to police. This happened after 9 p.m. on the 2000 block of Southwest Charleston Street. Witnesses reported to 911 that a person riding in their car had just been shot, according to authorities. When officers arrived at the scene, they found an 18-year-old man with a gunshot wound to his head. Now, that may sound bad, but he was taken to Harborview Medical with non-life-threatening injuries. And they're still interviewing witnesses and working to develop a suspect description. And when I first saw this story, the thing that came to my mind was, for a brief period of time, I lived in Chicago. And one of the things that my friend told me when I went to go live with him in Chicago was to not do any of this kind of road ragey type thing. He said, don't cut anybody off. Don't try to peek in front of anybody if you're in your car. If you're walking down the street, don't flip anybody off or anything like that. And I said, why? And he said, well, a lot of these guys, when they're in gangs, they take those kinds of things as severe slights. Cut somebody off, jaywalk in front of them, things like that. And they won't hesitate at a moment's notice to shoot you. I said, why would they do that? And he said, well, it's just something that's been going on in our community for years. It's just around here, you'll notice that people are very polite because they don't want to get shot. So now I'm thinking what's going on in Seattle, or at least what's going on in a lot of major cities across the United States, is that because we've become so lax, because we've become so undisciplined when it comes to crime in our areas, that this is the result, that you get people getting shot in the street. I want to encourage people to think about it like this. Like, why is crime increasing in Seattle and other major cities across the United States? It has a lot to do with drugs and drug trade. When you have open-air drug markets, people compete over that space. They get very territorial over that space. Doesn't matter if it's a street corner, doesn't matter if it's a parking lot. And I can tell you, as a former drug addict, the majority of my drug deals, when I was a filthy drug addict, went down on street corners or in parking lots. Rarely, if ever, is it that movie trope where you go into somebody's house and they've got a bong over in the corner and some incense burning and they're listening to some Doobie Brothers records. That's not really the case. The majority of the time, we're talking open-air drug deals. And when you allow that in your city, people will begin to become territorial. They will begin to become very defensive over that space because that is how they make their money. It's much more complicated than just, well, we don't want to prosecute people for low-level drug crimes. It's much, much more complicated than that. For drug dealers, the same way that they might look at their street corner or their parking lot is the same way that you might look at your own job. A lot of these guys also have their own product. They get it sourced from a specific person, and so you get different quote-unquote flavors, if you will, of different products. So it's not exactly like, or it's not exactly as simple as, well, we'll just allow this kind of low-level street crime to go on, and if you're caught with less than a gram of this or a half gram of that, we're just going to cut you a ticket and let you go. When you invite drugs into your city, you invite crime into your city. These things have a domino effect. It doesn't matter if you make it, quote unquote, a victimless crime, or you try to make it a misdemeanor or whatever. This is what you invoke in people, and this is what you promote in your town. And I, keep in mind, I'm very libertarian about this. I think that if you want to put something in your body, that you should be free to put that thing in your body. I have no issue with it whatsoever. The problem is that when it then becomes an enterprise for people and it becomes their entire livelihood. So I'm thinking much more about kind of reworking my libertarian stance on this issue and saying, well, it might be okay to go out and to ingest drugs, but should we have tolerance for people who sell those drugs? You want to talk about hitting people with possession charges? You want to talk about hitting people with distribution charges? I'm much more in favor of going after people who are distributing these drugs than people who might be taking it for recreational use. And again, this is coming from somebody who effectively has a PhD in street-level drug addiction. I understand far better than anybody else out there on the city council or any of the random bureaucrats out there or any commission that anybody could put together how drugs work on the streets. And maybe that's one of the primary issues with what we see in the city of Seattle or anywhere else, is that you have a bunch of people effectively doing guesswork on how to treat issues at the street level. And I can tell you from firsthand experience that the way that you treat those issues is by not tolerating them whatsoever. You have a zero tolerance policy, and what do? They scatter because they don't want to be around it because they know what the ramifications are. Very few people are willing to take the risk when you have a zero tolerance policy. So I hope that this young man recovers, and I sincerely hope that the fine people who run this city understand that when you invite drugs into your city, you invite crime into your city. I'm Jack Stein. I'm filling in for Dory Monson. We have to take a really quick break. When we get back, my very good friend, Mr. Billy Sunshine, will be on the line, and we will be talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene and her walking back her initial thoughts on the America First Party. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. I'm Jack Stein, sitting in for Mr. Dory Monson. On the line right now is my very good friend and my one and only liberal menace, the man who has been fired from every single radio station he has ever worked for being what, Billy? Too liberal. Billy Sunshine, ladies and gentlemen. So,
not true. None of it's true. Not everyone.
Every word of it.
Not everyone. I haven't been fired from every not true. Mostly, yes. Well, what's really true is that I keep getting fired from the same station over and over again.
Yeah, that's true. They keep letting you back in. So, Billy, conservative Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene scrapped her plans over the weekend for her America First caucus after receiving blowback from leaders in her own party, despite confirming through a spokesperson on Friday that the caucus would launch. And this is what is so odd about all of this, is that she was trying to do this kind of a America First caucus, which is another way of saying a MAGA caucus, right? It's this kind of coded language that
I certainly that's part of it. Yeah.
So, yeah. But then there was a statement that was released by her spokesperson, sent it to CNN in an email Saturday afternoon, saying that Congresswoman wants to make clear that she is not launching anything. This was an early planning proposal and nothing was agreed to or approved. That's what he said in the email. And he goes on to say she didn't approve of the language and has no plans to launch anything. So this is a complete reversal from what she said on Friday when she was saying that she was going to launch this caucus. Now, I don't understand why she wouldn't just come out and say, I'm in the MAGA America First caucus. Why she didn't just make that? It would be very popular. I don't know why she's now bringing that back, Billy Sunshine.
Well, I mean, first of all, she's not in any denial about being part of the MAGA caucus, that's for sure. She's, you know, all the way with Trump,
yeah,
which is certainly her right as a crazy person. But let's talk about what the America First caucus includes.
Yeah.
Things like, for example, it wants to promote uniquely Anglo-Saxon political traditions.
Yes.
I wonder what they are. and get this, infrastructure that, quote, reflects the architectural, engineering, and aesthetic value that befits the progeny of European architecture.
Oh, no, Billy. You know what?
You hearing what I'm hearing? Do you hear what I hear?
You know what this sounds like to me, Billy?
Do you hear what I hear?
This sounds like some Nazi nonsense. And I don't think that Marjorie Taylor Greene is a Nazi by any stretch of the imagination. But if you look at the kind of stuff that white supremacists talk about, what do they talk about? They use that kind of language. And I find it to be pretty disgusting. And I'm all against, Billy, by the way, I'm all against this whole kind of toxic whiteness idea. I really hate when people use that terminology. But this kind of fixation on Anglo-Saxon, so on and so forth, it's just not conducive to a healthy society and a multicultural society.
Yeah, America First was, you know, the creator of the Klan. And, you know, also Donald Trump.
What are you talking about?
America First was one of the creators of the Ku Klux Klan.
No, was it really?
When they were coming up.
Are you pulling my chain right now? Is this something
I don't think so. I mean, this is something I'm reading somewhere, but, you know, I didn't double check it or anything. But,
yeah, okay, Billy.
That's what the article I just read was saying. I like to quote what Ted Lieu said about it. Take your nativist crap and shove it.
Yeah, Snopes says that that's not true.
Ooh,
really.
Snopes, I love them.
That's not a thing, Billy. So what are you doing bringing this nonsense onto the Dory Monson show? So Snopes says that that's not true whatsoever. So, I mean, Billy, but there is this kind of fixation, I feel like, that's an unhealthy fixation where people make that kind of word choice where they say, well, we need to adhere to Anglo-Saxon values, whatever that might mean. But it is a reflection of when people say something like, well, we need to adhere to black cultural values. And I'm thinking, well, don't we just have human values? Don't we just have people values of what it means to treat somebody with a decency and kindness and an understanding and empathy?
No. That's something that's been missing for a while now.
I don't think so, Billy. If you and I can be friends, if I can be the way that I think about the world as an independent and the way that you think about the world as a horrible liberal with all of your garbage ideas, and you and I can still be friends even though you have terrible, awful ideas, that's an amazing thing because we treat each other with kindness and empathy even though you have horrible
ideas. Yeah, but at least one of us is a very special person.
This is,
you know, you're the son I never wanted, Jack.
Exactly.
What can I say?
Exactly. But Billy, the primary issue with people like Marjorie Taylor Greene or anybody else who kind of comes onto the political scene is they feel as if they have to make this big splash and they have to do this big presentation as to what it means to be an American. And I'm going to fight against this and that. And then they end up with their foot in their mouth. When they say
but
something
European
like,
architecture, Jack?
Right, exactly.
European architecture?
Exactly.
You've got to be kidding. That's so racist that it's so unnecessary to go there to say even the buildings have to be European. Oh, my God.
I don't know, Billy. I don't know what she was trying to imply with that statement by saying, well, I want European. Maybe she was reaching for some kind of Grecian, some kind of that kind of. I want to go back to where we're all wearing togas and we walk around and we feel the giant pillars of the Greeks. But I have no idea why.
Well, you shall know them. You shall know them by who they hang with. Like, for example, the people who are joining the caucus are Louis Gohmert and Paul Gosar. Paul Gosar, by the way, my favorite thing about him is he's got five brothers and sisters. All of them bought an ad out and said, do not vote for our brother. There's something wrong with him.
I remember that.
Yeah.
You know, but Billy, one of the problems that's going on right now with media is that because they're in the Trump slump, because they don't have Trump to beat up on and use to fluff their ratings, now they have to go for the craziest, nuttiest members of the GOP, and that happens to be Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is certifiably an insane person. You don't go around talking about Jewish space lasers in all sincerity without being a nutty human being, and also detracting from the conversation, Billy. I mean, it limits our ability to talk about more complex issues when we are focused on someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who by all accounts is not well.
You're so right, but realize what you're saying. What you're saying is, now that Trump is gone, now that the super crazy person we had that was president, we have to find the other crazies. But we had such a great crazy in President Trump, we never needed to go digging before.
Right. I know, but that's
I agree with you.
Happened, Billy. So your friends at CNN and MSNBC and ABC, they all need
and Fox,
they all needed President Trump so much so that there's now something called the Trump slump, where all of these major news organizations are having to lay off something like 20, 30, 40% of their staff because they no longer need 24-hour coverage of Donald Trump's Twitter feed or Donald Trump in the White House. I mean, it was so they put so much effort into trying to hammer the guy and monitor every aspect of his life that now
Biden's boring.
Biden is not only is he boring, but they also give him a pass because they don't want to criticize him.
Well, there's no why criticize him. He's, you know, trying to do the best he can, and he's not, you know, a bad guy. He's not there to steal from us.
He's not there to
just make his friends rich.
Yes, he is, Billy. That's exactly. Have you read the infrastructure bill?
No, not in the same way. I'm sure that, you know, Biden's son takes advantage of his daddy's thing, just like you or I would if we could. Let's face it, Jack.
Billy, if you have not read
if we had rich daddies, we'd be in their business today.
Billy, if you have not read the infrastructure bill, I don't know what to tell you.
I certainly haven't read the infrastructure.
It is a massive theft, Billy. It is a massive theft from the American people. And what it basically does is it transfers taxpayer dollars, which have yet to be collected, into the pockets of unions and special interests and crony capitalists, Billy.
That we're going to fix bridges.
No, only about 5 or 6% of it goes to fixing bridges.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's total garbage. It's one of the worst bills.
The first thing we need to fix is we need to get rid of these omnibus. Is that the word?
Omnibus spending
bills that are just everything they throw into them. Don't you think?
Yeah, and that's exactly what
clean bill.
And that's exactly what the infrastructure bill is. It's an omnibus spending bill. It's garbage.
Yeah, and so isn't HR1 like that too?
No, you'd be talking about something like the COVID relief package, which is also just a huge mess of a bill, or anything else.
I don't like that.
Well, that means that you and I finally have something in common, Billy. Thank you so much for coming on the Dory Monson Show. I'm Jack Stein. I'm sitting in for Mr. Dory Monson. That was my very good friend, Mr. Billy Sunshine, who you can hear every single night on Cairo Nights at 8:30. We have to take a really, really quick break. We'll be right back with a whole lot more. After this. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. I'm Jack Stein, sitting in for Dory Monson this afternoon. I read an article from Cairo 7 that really got me thinking about life and how long I would want to live for. Hester Ford was the oldest living American, and she passed away this weekend at 115 years old. She was born on August 15th, 1905 in Lancaster County, South Carolina. She was a pillar and a stalwart member of our family and provided much needed love, support, and understanding to us all. That is one of her many great grandchildren posted on Facebook. So get this, she had 12 children in total, 48 grandchildren, 108 great grandchildren, and approximately 120 great great grandchildren. So her great granddaughter went on to say that although she has passed, her legacy and memory will continue to live on through her family and everyone she has touched to make this world a better place for generation to come. That is such an amazing statement, and what an amazing life, if you think about it. Somebody who lived through two world wars, Vietnam, Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, everything that's happened, the moon landing, everything good, everything bad about the United States, living through the civil rights movement, living through Jim Crow. Her great-grandparents, according to this article, were slaves. I mean, it's just an amazing life to see somebody traverse the last 115 years of our history. And it made me think about how far we have come in the United States. I mean, if you look at everything that Hester Ford experienced in her life, when we talk about something like Jim Crow, Hester Ford lived through Jim Crow. At the same time, Hester Ford lived through seeing the first black man elected president of the United States and the first black woman elected vice president of the United States. It just kind of goes to show how much can change in such a short period of time. But at the same time, it made me think, would I want to live to be 115 years old? What would that take to get to that point, to be 115 years old? There was another article that came out, it's a story that came out actually last week, talking about human-monkey hybrid embryos created by a joint China-U.S. scientist team. I know this is a hard segue, but bear with me. So a team of scientists at the U.S., China, and elsewhere have developed embryos that are a mix of human and monkey cells for the first time in history. The embryos, which were detailed on Thursday in the scientific journal Cell, were created for scientists to uncover new ways to produce organs for people who are in need of transplants. And I have to tell you that if you decided to put monkey human organs that you grew in a lab into my body so that I could live to be 115 years old, no, thank you. I am not interested whatsoever. And I was going through the comments underneath this article and people were saying, oh, how great is this going to be that I can get my own monkey organ put into my body? If I have a history of heart disease in my family or if I have a history of liver disease in my family, how phenomenal it will be for me to be able to get a monkey liver or a monkey heart in my body. And I can tell you that there's something that we have developed. I think it's a newer thing in society where we all have this kind of unhealthy fear of death or this unhealthy neuroses around death, so much so that the idea of growing monkey organs in a lab appeals to us. And maybe it's because we've gotten further away from religion. Maybe it's because we've gotten further away from what it means to participate in a community. But there is something going on now where maybe people have become so neurotic around the idea of dying that we've just become ill with it, if that makes sense, that we've become so hyper-focused on death at this point that we're no longer just enjoying life. I think that reigns true for what we've seen during COVID-19. Look at how many people are so deathly afraid of contracting COVID-19. Look at how many people are irrationally afraid of contracting COVID-19, which, by the way, Hester Ford lived through a smallpox outbreak. She lived through the Spanish flu. I mean, look at everything that she was able to live through in terms of disease at 115 years of age. I do think in many ways we have developed this neuroses around what it means to be a healthy individual and what it means to live a full and a complete life. And the intersection of those two things has led us to this conclusion where we have to put monkey organs inside of our body. And I'll tell you this, there seems something to be deeply unethical about this whole idea that you are going to be taking human cells from where? Probably from aborted fetal tissue, and then you are putting it into monkey cells in an effort to come to that kind of scientific endpoint where you can eventually grow organs in a lab. Now, you might be out there saying, Jack Stein, I would be 100% fine with taking a monkey organ inside of my body. To which, to you, I say, fine, enjoy your monkey organ, enjoy having a monkey heart or a monkey liver, that's all for you. But I'm going to take a page out of the notebook of Hester Ford, and I'm going to kind of roll the dice on it. And I'm going to say, hey, man, if I live to 115 and I end up having 118 great-grandchildren and approximately 120 great-great-grandchildren, I'm totally fine with that. I'm totally fine with this idea of just kind of experiencing life on life's terms. If I end up going out due to a heart attack or if I end up going out due to liver failure, that's totally fine with me. No thank you on the monkey organ. It's one of the things that I'm going to draw the line at. I just am not interested whatsoever in having a monkey organ put into my body. So get this. The scientists then grew the mixed embryos in test tubes for up to 20 days in order how to study the animal and human cells communicate with one another. This is just getting more, is worse and worse and worse as I read this. The idea behind the research is to determine whether or not monkeys could eventually be able to grow human organs for transplants. Can you imagine that you walk into your doctor's office and they have an array of organs that have been grown in a lab and they say, hey, you want new lungs? You want a new heart? You want a new liver? We got it for you for the low, low price of your dignity. All you have to do is sacrifice your dignity and then you too can get a set of organs produced from child fetal tissue grown in a lab. No, thank you. I'm Jack Stein filling in for Dory Monson. We have to take a really quick break. When we get back, we're going to be talking about Adam Toledo and everything that I went through over the weekend in studying that footage, because I did go through it piece by piece, and you are going to hear a conclusion that most people likely are not coming to. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this.